how's Massachusetts bearing the brunt of this, Colin?
I almost didn't make it today, my friend. For the second time in my walking/running career, I was hit by a car.
You're kidding me.
The snow. I'm running today. Nobody's out. I'm feeling all impressive, right? Like I'm Roald Amundsen, and a guy comes out of a underground lot, assuming, of course, no one could be out, and boom, onto the hood I go.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I think I could have been a stuntman, like in the 50s, because this has happened a couple times now, and I've pretty much emerged unscathed, but I have a public service announcement for people. Look, other people exist in this world. Like, when you get on the train and you're taken care of, there still might be people behind you. Move in. And when you're driving, look both ways when you pull out of something. Other people exist, not just you.
I picture you rolling up that windshield like either Starsky or Hutch.
I was a little kind of like Jacob Marley's ghost shaking my fist in the snow as I had this white mane upon me, and I think I might have declaimed a five. But what can you say? Like, what can you do?
Right.
Am I gonna pull the guy out of the car right there? It's like, let's do this. No.
Wow. Well, we're glad you're okay. Keep an eye out for people and assume, as we often say here on Downtown, just assume everybody out there in a car is stupid and you'll be okay.
Yes.
Yikes. Well, let's talk about something that will bring a smile to your face, and that would be the dulcet tones of one of the great and I think often overlooked broadcasters of all time, certainly in New England, the great Fred Cusick.
It's interesting that you think he's overlooked. Why do you say that?
I don't hear his name come up as much when people mention Johnny Most and Ned Martin and Ken Coleman and Kurt Gowdy, Gil Santos. And people, I don't hear them mention Cusick as much, and they certainly should.
I was going to bring up Martin because he's kind of a parallel with Cusick, right? He's sort of like the baseball version, almost Shakespearean in some ways.
Yes,
right?
Ned Martin is my favorite baseball broadcaster of all time.
Interesting. And they're kind of like Johnny Most, I think, is almost like a caricature. You know what I mean? Like, Bart, the DJ, like, right? That whole kind of thing. And Santos has been around, like, he kind of spans the generations, whereas Cusick is more back in the heyday of the Bruins of the 1970s when a lot of rinks were being built in this area that didn't exist. People forget how, like, negligible hockey was until the late 60s. Early 70s with those Bruins teams, and Cusick was doing his thing then, and then also in the 1980s with the Bork Bruins and the Neely Bruins. And my introduction to Fred Cusick was a bit different in that when I was a kid, little kid, I was terrified of the dark, and my parents indulged me in this, I must have been really annoying, this encompassing fear by letting me take my Spider-Man sleeping bag down to the room adjacent to the living room where they were watching TV, and I was thinking about how I liked stories and all of that. And meanwhile, Fred Cusick, his voice is trailing in from the other room, and he's giving me a whole new conception of how we might think about the relationship between sound and sense.
Well, and he was so good, and what made him great, and we've talked about this before, is the fact that he always understood it was about the game. It was not about him.
Correct. Yeah, I'd say that that's definitely true. And it's like someone like Doc Emrick, right? I listen to him now, and I can't stand him. I can't watch a broadcast that he's on.
Really?
I can't stomach the histrionics. Like, it's like for the same reason that I don't like Bruce Springsteen and the way he sings. He sings in like this perpetual, like, cum grunt, like, ugh, ugh. I hear that with Doc Emrick. And Fred Cusick, he had a different kind of syllabic integrity, I felt like. He read the play better. So, like, you should be able to, if you're not paying attention to a game, pick up the cadences in the announcer's voice such that you know a play is developing and you can turn around right in time for the scoring opportunity. And Fred Cusick was the master of that.
Absolutely. And I do like Doc Emrick, but I also have an affinity for those broadcasters and Cusick, certainly Ned Martin, Vin Scully. Those who understand the language and use it and have more than one word to describe a given scenario.
And they speak, too, with silence. They know when to close their mouths. It's like the jazz pianist Ahmad Jamal, right? He would chop out bits of the sound And then Miles Davis later got that idea from Jamal, and he did the same thing in his late 50s recordings with how he'd approach the trumpet. And Cusick would always allow for that lacuna. He would let you have that break, and it gave him more of a punch. You trusted him more when he was going to say something again. But it's like Wayne Gretzky, you know, the way he would read a play. You'd see Gretzky skate to a place of ice where the puck was not, and if it turned up there, great, because he had anticipated it. Maybe it wouldn't, but if it did, it would be a payoff. And I feel that Cusick read the play that way. And it's like, and you could tell that he was passionate, but he wasn't sort of overdriven. Like, Jack Edwards gets a kind of rap for being overdriven, I feel like. And I like the fact that he's passionate. Like, recently I was watching a game against the Devils, and the Bruins go ahead, and they get, one of the Bruins players gets in a fight with the Devils player, and the Devils player kind of, like, covers up. He doesn't want any part of the fight. And so Jack Edwards starts shouting. I mean, who says this? A painted turtle has been spotted in North New Jersey. It's like when he's like a master of herpetology, because like a painted turtle in the bottom, right? It's like if you turn one over, they're actually red. I'm thinking like, wow, dude, like he had that ready to go, but he doesn't have kind of the verbal acumen, the elegance, that elan that Cusick had.
Now, speaking of Cusick and from your childhood, a fondness for a team that may well be the best team, certainly the best Bruins team, that didn't win a Stanley Cup. And that's that 82-83 team. And boy, I was looking through some of the stats and remembering the talent on that team that just goes on and on, from Barry Peterson, who had 107 points that year, to Rick Middleton, both of the Crowders, Keith and Bruce, and Peter McNabb, a 22-year-old Ray Bourque, a veteran in Brad Park, Pete Peters in goal. That was an incredible team.
It was, but it's also a little pyrite-y. It's a little kind of fool's gold with that team, and that Bourque did miss 15 games that year. And their roster, and this was a problem for the Bruins throughout the 80s, it was very top-heavy. So, yes, Brad Park is there, but it's not the Brad Park who's finishing runner-up to Denny Potvin and Bobby Orr quite often for the Norris in the 1970s. But in Peterson and Middleton, you really had something. You had a rich man's Bergeron and Marchand. And I think there's some interesting similarities between these two teams. Now, Peterson, unfortunately, was dogged by injuries, right? And Middleton was the winger who was better defensively, which you don't usually see very often. Like, Bob Gainey was a winger. But for people who don't really know hockey, the center has so many responsibilities that I think it's one of the hardest positions to play in all of sports. And Middleton was more of the defensive center in a sense, even though he was a right wing. And you had Pete Peters, who was a very frustrating goalie. He had the year of his life. They went 50-20-10.
Right.
I mean, to win 50 games. And don't forget, this is the glory days of the Islanders. And I don't know that there was ever a better team than the one the Islanders had the year before. This would be their last cup run. And you have the burgeoning heyday of the Oilers. This is not like a league of kind of cupcakes. You have some real all-time dynastic teams, and the Bruins took the President's Trophy.
Yeah, it was an incredible team and so much fun to watch. And as I looked at that roster, I thought, my God, I think, was that the year they brought up Gord Kluzak, too?
Yeah, Kluzak was there. And, I mean, Stan Jonathan played a game. So it's a weird kind of estuarial era for the Bruins, right? This overlap between the lunch pail AC and what's getting going in the 80s. Like, so Middleton's basically going to be the guy there for both of it. O'Reilly, he's the captain. Cashman is still there.
Yeah.
Keeping in with four goals. He missed 15 games too. And you had Steve Kasper. He was hurt, but he had this reputation at the time. He'd be like negative 27 on the season, but people thought he was this defensive genius because like a few times he held Gretzky to like less than 3 points in a game. And they barely got past the Sabres. Remember that? That's
yeah.
When your man Brad Park had that overtime goal. And then they had to go against the Islanders. And I remember being in the sleeping bag when that was going on because Cusick kept saying, and I didn't realize he was a hockey player, he kept just saying, bossy, Bossy. I'm thinking, like, what's this guy complaining about? It was bothering him. But Mike Bossy was potting four goals in the elimination game, and Cusick was losing his stuff.
And they had that. The Islanders had that goalie tandem that year with Billy Smith and Melanson, wasn't it?
Right. And it's so weird with Billy Smith, too, because he's a Hall of Fame goalie. But he played in the regular season. He'd only play 40 games at most. Sometimes he'd play less than the backup, Melanson or Chico Resch. But then he comes to play. We wouldn't have something like that now. Can you imagine that? If everyone sort of splits, right? It's not kind of this this where Rask gets 50 of the games now, or 55, whatever, 60, whatever it may be. But they split, and then one guy gets exclusively the games in the playoffs. And Smith was one of those great sort of playoff competitors, though. And I think the Oilers expected to have the Islanders' number when they got to the Cup Finals, and Smith just shut the door. But I think Peters had something like 8 shutouts that year. Wow. Now, that might sound like, oh, he has 8 shutouts. This is the 1980s. Games are 10-7. There are no shutouts, right? Like, you can be Grant Fuhr, and you might get one shutout all season long. And yet, Peters was incredibly frustrating as a netminder, was horrible in the playoffs, and then he was also bad in the Canada Cup in 84.
Before we let you go, I need to hear the story. You mentioned it to me in a message here about your experience working in a hardware store with a French customer.
Oh, yeah, the hardware store. So early in my career, I worked in a hardware store, and I was horrible at it. If you had a key that needed to be made and you actually wanted to gain ingress into a building, you didn't want me touching that key. And people would talk to me. This woman in my building would come in, and she didn't know I was a writer, and she would talk to me like I was Sully, the guy who carries Oscar's trash can around on Sesame Street. Like, look at you, because I was reading a book. Good for you. Anyway, this woman came in, and I was reading Rimbaud, his letters and his poems, and she was French, and she read it aloud for me. Now, I don't speak French, but you could kind of get the meaning, right, from the way she read it. So I'm in the hardware store. I'm Sully from Sesame Street. This woman's reading Rimbaud, and I'm thinking about Fred Cusick in syllabic integrity.
I love it. It all comes together at the end, as it always does with Colin Fleming when he joins us every Tuesday here on Downtown. Colin, thank you. Hope you weather the storm. Please don't get hit by any more cars, and we'll talk with you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Colin Fleming, Tuesdays on Downtown.